Thank you to the whole panel. It's now the floor is open for questions or discussion.
A question for Elma Moses, since you were just talking. You mentioned especially the elderly, and I was hearing perhaps a sense of having two cultures almost within the Cree communities. And I'm just going to change a little bit my direction of question. I'm wondering how you, with perhaps that in mind, how you might see the Anglophone communities, the English, and their perhaps sometimes or beginning attention that's being paid to being a minority community.
In terms of, it's just the generational thing, because we moved away from the nomadic lifestyle to a more community-based lifestyle. It's still our culture, and it's still it's not two cultures. It's just our culture had to adapt to the contemporary fact that we have to be settled into these communities. In terms of the Anglophone, being here in Montreal, I'm kind of a minority too within the part of that minority language group, and so I have to choose how to be served within the healthcare services while I'm in this territory, and I'm not really familiar with the Anglophone communities, although my husband is Anglophone and Francophone, because when we go to the healthcare services, we just go in French. But in terms of the Cree up north, in terms of the health services, it's only recently that we have more the provincial government get interested within the territory, the northern Quebec. Before, it was the federal government. All the nurses that were there were Anglophone. And it's only in the 70s and 80s that we started having more Francophone healthcare providers within the region. So whereas the Cree, our second language, is for the ones that went to school is English. There's a minority of us whose language is English, because I went to a French residential school. So you have to like we say, démêler les langues in the sense, but we have a minority of our elders who are monolingual Cree. And yes, it is problematic, you know, because they cannot, sometimes there's problems of translation, and sometimes that it creates problems to the doctors and the nurses, and I think in terms of the, so you can imagine the quality of services that they are getting, and in terms of a personal story, they had to come in. I was at the hospital because one of my daughters was sick, and they had to get me like 10 at night to ask me whether I could translate for an elderly man, because he only spoke Cree. So, you know, I had to translate into Cree. So that's how he was able to get better services. But what if I wasn't there, you know? The health risk, maybe his health could have been aggravated. Anyways. I know that I'm not really answering the question about the English minority, you know, but...
Thank you. Go ahead.
I was thinking of that when you were all talking about how to describe pain, how most doctors, when they're trying to find out how painful or what kind of pain you're in, they ask you to do that temperature. They say on a scale of 1 to 10. And I'm thinking that's like so culturally loaded, right? I mean, you know, how you describe pain and how you feel pain. I was just thinking how difficult that must be in these different kinds of cultural contexts to, you know, be asked on a scale of 1 to 10, how much pain do you feel? Anyway, that was an anecdote. That was sort of a comment. My question is this. So we're talking about the cultural implications of linguistic barriers, but what came out in the three presentations as well is that different cultural communities have a different vision of what medicine is. And so, and in fact, I would say too that you see different medical cultures, even between English and French language institutions that train doctors or that train healthcare professionals. So I was wondering to what extent that also feeds in to these questions of the cultural implications of linguistic barriers.
Well, I think, sir. I totally agree with your comments. I think it's when you think of this kind of ecological approach or cultural approach, it feeds into what I would call the institutional level, or what I call also the majority level. Yes, I think there are huge barriers between French and English as a culture, whether regardless of minority or majority status, you know. Being, for example, a Francophone within an English institution, I can see the way things are organized and things are talked about and things that are kind of the norm, which me as a Francophone, and, you know, never mind that I come from France originally, but at Quebec, you know, totally against my grain. Like, it's not the way I would do it because I was not brought up in this kind of community. The fact that, you know, everything is kind of on time. Everything is kind of, you know, in half an hour we can conduct a meeting. And, you know, these are little things. The way people approach patients or families is actually different. Even the kind of the medical stories or the medical history taking... has a bit of a different take whether you're Francophone or Anglophone. So, and I think it kind of goes beyond being a minority situation. There are very much difference. And I maybe just one small comment. I did a study on looking at secondhand smoking a few years ago, and I did the comparison. We did a comparison with a student, the Francophone in Quebec, and then the Francophone outside Quebec, and the Anglophone outside Quebec. So we kind of looked, and then I wanted to see where the Francophone in minority situation fare in comparison to Francophone majority in Quebec, and the Anglophone majority outside Quebec, and the Francophone minority. And I found out that actually the Francophones were in between. They were kind of influenced by the Anglophone culture, and they behave a bit not like people in Quebec anymore. They have, and it was kind of very, very obvious in terms of what, you know, people were asking whether or not they would take measures to actually have people smoke outside of the house or not smoke in the car or, you know, tell their friends. And in Quebec, it was kind of, they were very tolerant, you know, and whereas outside Quebec, even Francophones were very, you know, very strict. They said, no, by no way we would do that. So I found out that there was a kind of a glissement de culture, I don't know how to say it, between, you know, being in a majority situation, being in a minority situation, or, you know, from French to English. I don't know if I understand our answer, but definitely something is to be kind of researched further.
I just would add, I think, that, if you're, you arrive at the hospital, it might be an emergency situation. Maybe you need a cesarean. Maybe surgery is at hand. I think we all agree that we want to put ourselves in the experts' hands and as much as possible take our cue from them and follow the protocol as they lay it out. They know how to do that. That's an area of expertise we give away happily, and we want them to exert in that situation. But I just want to draw attention, it's enormously different to start talking about preventative health, preventative practices. How do we actually get people informed to the door when there is a promotion program? What about your flu vaccine? How do you find out about it? How do we get you there? How do you learn where it is and what it's for, whether it's appropriate for you? So there's, I think it's wise in terms of talking about cultural barriers to also talk about different kinds of medicine. And, you know, there's enormous, you know, we're enjoying improved longevity, if we want to talk about mortality rates and so on, largely attributed to the improvement in health promotion and prevention and that area. That's the whole notion of early impact and early diagnosis rather than delaying your visit to your doctor because you just have such a level of anxiety and discomfort around communication with the majority physician or what have you. So I think the problem, the cultural dimension crops up enormously when you start digging into the lifestyle, the households, the day-to-day lives, and that's where you get such a huge variety as well, of course. You've got these congregated neighborhoods, which is good. It's a buffer, as we've been told, to form these neighborhoods of likeness with your neighbors and so on. But at the same time, it does create differences in terms of how we live, how we tackle disease and all these things.
I just want to mention that in terms of the EU Cree traditional healings, I know that McGill and l'Université de Montréal and l'Université d'Ottawa are doing a research with some Cree communities on their testing on some of the traditional medicines. Also there's also a pilot project on the traditional healers, the Cree healers, which is because in terms of health, we still use that type of medicine, the traditional type of medicine among the more traditional families that I'm talking about, you know. And one of the reason why I'm talking about that, because my family is one of the most is one of those minority who are more traditional oriented, and my parents are 85 now, and they don't have diabetes. I think their diet is they still eat a lot of the the country food that we call the caribou, the moose, and all that, and the berries too are still very important part of their diet. Although they have a more Western style of diet too, but I just wanted to say that in terms of research that McGill and they're doing a study on the traditional healing and the traditional medicine. And also there is a movement in terms of education of actually training some Crees to be nurses. And as far as I know right now, we only have one Cree doctor, which is Dr. Kitty in Chisasibi, a practitioner over there. And I went to her presentation like 2 years ago, and she was saying that in terms of her patients, the ones that have diabetes, that when they live within the community, their sugar level is quite high. But as soon as they go on the land for a few weeks, then their sugar level drops down. So because they have more access to the traditional foods, whereas in the community it's more process and more Western style, what we call Wamstuxiu Mijam. So I found it very interesting that she mentioned those as part of her presentation thing.
We will take one last question.
I think this one's probably more directed both at Anne and Joanne to a certain extent. I was struck in one thing that you said, Anne, when you were looking at the attitudes towards secondhand smoke, and you looked at the various sort of really large language groups, and then referring back to the stats you had on the survey of the vitality of official language minorities, and you drew our attention to one aspect, but I think there's another really interesting aspect in those two pie charts that you showed, mm-hmm. and I don't remember, I think it's 48% of Francophones outside of Quebec had a hybrid identity. Essentially, they saw themselves as Anglophone and Francophone, mm-hmm. and 50% of Anglophones in Quebec had the same notion. And one thing that strikes me there when you look at that is that those communities are highly bilingual, to a certain degree integrated into the majorities, and are perhaps increasingly not just in terms of identity and language terms, but taking on some of the characteristics from both of those cultures, if you like. I can think of like another reference point would be the General Social Survey that does a lot of a lot of questions around volunteering and attitudes towards institutions in terms of trust and a lot of cultural practices. And what's intriguing there is that Francophones outside of Quebec and Anglophones in Quebec again are sort of between the two majorities, between the Anglophone and Francophone majorities. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they start to resemble each other, not in every aspect, but it's almost as though that, when you start to bridge between two cultures, which side of the bridge did you leave from and where do you meet? And I think that it's a kind of an intriguing notion that that you can take a sort of a, let's say, mixed marriage family living here in Quebec, and if they move to Manitoba, they'll still be a mixed marriage family. They'll have a minority aspect to their composition. So I just wondered whether, in terms of, say, the evolution and the trends in what we call official language minority communities, are those two constituencies starting to resemble each other, and to what extent, they're taking on the trappings of both their own sort of native culture, if you like, and the majority that surrounds them?
Well, I think it's a hard question to answer. But, I can just kind of give you just a few reflections that come to mind. I think it is true that there are, I can see them a bit in between, in a way, and looking like each other. But what was striking is that it depends actually where people, we are a bit sinning by kind of putting people, reducing people to the mean, because there are very differences, great differences, whether you live in a community where there are quite a few people sharing the same language and culture and grouped around schools or institutions, and people who are spread. And, amongst Francophones who are spread around, they actually have more tendency to kind of behave like the majority because they have no choice. So the only life that is left that is, for example, Francophone is within the family. And I've met some of these people, and some people are coming back to with their own kids saying, I lost the language because I had no institution, I had no chance to go to school in French, but I want my kid to reclaim their language. And so therefore, I'm actually coming to, for example, Saskatoon, Regina, or Calgary, whatever, and I want them to be in the French school. So there is kind of these two tendencies, in a way, I am, assimilated, sorry, but I still feel Francophone inside me and in my family, and I still speak French, not all the time, but sometimes, but I want my kid to not forget that they are Francophone, But another side of it, which is another reflection, and then I'll stop there, is in the new generations, what I find is that kids who have actually come from mixed marriages, where you speak English and French, they live in a minority situation, and my own kids are like this, with a dad who is Anglophone and me who is Francophone. They define themselves not as Francophones and not as Anglophones. They define them as bilingual. And that's, it is, and I know it has been mentioned already in the literature, but it's so true, and in the, you know, certainly in the West, it's so interesting to see, I don't know what it means in terms of culture. They have actually, they are probably taking the best of each culture and make their own. But, you know, I don't know what the bilingual culture is.
Do you happen to know what the findings were on trust of institutions? You mentioned the question.
So we will continue after lunch discussing barriers, hopefully facilitators also. But for now, I invite you to lunch and discussions around the table. Thank you very much.